You are listening to Leaders and Legends, a podcast featuring some of Indiana's most fascinating men and women whose impact has shaped our state, our communities, and us. Join us as we discuss their imprint on our history. Leaders and Legends is brought to you by Veteran Strategies Incorporated, your local veteran business enterprise specializing in public relations, media relations, public outreach, crisis communications, and digital photography. My name is Robert Bain, Principal of Veteran Strategies, former Deputy Chief of Staff to Mayor Greg Ballard, and Communications Director for the Indiana Republican Party. I'm honored to be your host for our discussion. We are joined today by Sherry Seiwert, who is the Pontifex Maximus of all things downtown Indy, and one of the most incredibly delightful people you'll ever meet. Thank you, Sherry, for joining us today.
It is absolutely my pleasure. Thank you.
Downtown's getting ready to get hopping.
Well, it's been hopping for the last couple of years.
But weather makes a difference.
Weather makes a tremendous difference. And so come May, even late April, we'll see a big difference in the people on the street.
You became president of Downtown Indy in 2012.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about what you did before then.
Sure. How far do you want me to go back?
You were born on what day?
Born and raised here in Indianapolis. Prior to that, I worked for a state agency called I tend to rename organizations after I start. So it was the Indiana Housing Finance Authority. Very easy. People called it IFA. And then I changed it to the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority, which became ICDA, which is horrible, or HICDA, but it better reflected what we did. And so it was a quasi-state agency. We didn't utilize state revenue, but we provided resources to communities throughout the state for community redevelopment.
And what'd you do before that? You said you were born, raised here. Where'd
born
you go to college?
Here.
Tell us everything.
You want to know everything?
How you met Andy?
Let's see. Now he's going to have to listen to this. I went to IU, so didn't get too far from home. Went to Broadway High School, so IPS grad, K-12.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I graduated from Howe.
Nice. All right. Public school.
So you didn't mind the IPS, just to digress, yes. The IPS referenda, which I directed in 2018, were you conflicted?
Boy, how many people are going to listen to this? So
millions.
So when I was a senior in high school, there was a debate on whether to close Brattleboro or Shortridge High School. And I was, believe it or not, the selected student to go in front of the IPS board and try and argue why Brattleboro should stay open. Now,
you won.
We did win. Mm-hmm. But if I were to be asked again if Brattleboro should have remained open, I would likely say no. It really is a real estate opportunity if IPS were to, sell it
and not to digress to the referendum. But I mean, yeah. Brattleboro's sitting at 37% occupancy.
It's
you
ridiculous.
Just can't run on
right.
tight budgets. You can't run buildings at
37%. No.
What was it like going to IU? Were you there for any particularly good basketball years?
Yeah. I was there. Well, Bobby Knight was, need I say more? So every year was a good basketball year while
sure.
I was there. I was there up until 87 when I graduated. And
championship?
Yeah. So great school. Really loved it. The only reason, though, truly that I went to IU, I would love to say because I wanted to become, go into medicine or something. No, I was the youngest of three, and my sister was at Purdue, and my brother was at Ball State, and I was thinking, what other school can I go to that they're, not there? So it was either Indiana State or IU. So that's truly the reason why I ended up at IU.
Well, you got to talk big smack.
Yeah, I did. I can't anymore, but I did that.
True. Point taken. No one I know who's gone to IU, let me say it a different way. Everybody I know who's attended IU would go back tomorrow. They had so much fun. They just talk about it's so beautiful and it's a great community. Just what's it like being at IU? Because everybody I know absolutely loved that experience.
Well, sure. When you're that age, I mean, if you could transplant me back to when I was a co-ed at, 19, absolutely, I'd go back. But my daughter is there now, so I do have a little bit of a taste. And it's changed somewhat, but it is. It's a wonderful experience in anybody's life when they're in college.
Like to go back at your current salary?
I can barely pay her tuition.
So. There are several organizations that market and support Indianapolis as a whole.
Yes.
You're president of Downtown Indy. Yes. How is that different, say, for example, from Visit Indy or other like organizations? You're all pulling in the same direction, but you do have different goals and methods.
You know, you're absolutely right. And so when you think about Downtown Indy, and we now say Inc., we almost put that ink on there, because when we changed our name to Downtown Indy, oddly enough, everyone started referring to Downtown Indianapolis as Downtown Indy. So we're no longer an organization. It sounds like we're the place, which is not a bad thing.
Sure.
But Downtown Indy Inc., you know, we often say we're the ones that create the product. So when you think about keeping a downtown safe and clean and vibrant, we create a product that Visit Indy can sell. So Visit Indy is the Convention and Visitors Association for our city, and they're the ones that are responsible for putting heads in beds. And that's really where a good portion of their resources come from. So the more folks, the more conventions they can get to Indianapolis, the more heads they can put in beds, that generates more resources. And certainly it's good for us. And obviously if downtown is a great place, a nice place to visit, folks are going to want to book their conventions.
Over the weekend, there was a story in the Indianapolis Star that talked about how the people attending the Big Ten men's basketball tournament were lamenting that it wasn't held in Indianapolis. I don't know if you saw that story.
We lament it too, that they wasn't held here. Yeah.
Point taken. But when you hear stuff like that, where several months ago for the Big Ten football championship, Mike Greenberg from ESPN tweeted that Indianapolis is the best big game city in the country. Indianapolis. How does that make you feel? Like everybody just wants to come here.
It makes us all feel good, right? I am grateful for the leaders that came before us that really planned our city well. So when you think about the layout of the convention center and the hotels, they're all in very close proximity. It's a very walkable downtown, obviously, and we've always maintained a very clean environment. And so, you know, that the cultural trail certainly added the walkability component to downtown. And yeah, it all works really well.
Does it matter to you that people are copying Indianapolis? We did a podcast with Ryan Vaughn, and he made it clear that cities who are looking to rise up a little bit, like join Indianapolis in this particular cohort, are aping and copying and studying. How does that make you feel, A, and B, do you do that to other cities?
Right. I was just going to say, I just got back. Well, New York is not a good comparison. I just got back from New York, but was meeting with the Bryant Park. There's a group that sort of recreated Bryant Park in New York City. So I went to go and meet with those folks and learn a little bit more about what they did. But sure, I go to mid-sized cities all the time. I'm on their websites. I'm, you know, culling through all their information, what's new, what's different. Because everybody's always trying to recreate themselves. They're always trying to recreate the place. And so it's, you know, it's part, you know, our downtown is what we say is authentic. So, you know, the older components of downtown, and then, you know, coupled with all of the new development and the density with the residents that have moved downtown, you know, you're always trying to think about the what's next. What's going to keep people from moving out of downtown? How do we generate more folks wanting to visit downtown? So, you know, just always thinking about what else.
Is there something you've seen in a like-sized city that you just kind of go, I wish we had that? I'm thinking of something, and I'll say it after you.
Oh, go ahead and say it first.
San Antonio.
With the canal walk or their, you know, and
river walk, is that what they call it? Yes, I just hear people when they go to San Antonio, that's what I hear. They go, we were in San Antonio. And then the next words out of their mouth are river walk.
And it's interesting. If you take the steps up from Riverwalk to kind of their downtown proper, mm-hmm. there isn't a whole lot going on. And I love San Antonio, mm-hmm. and I love the Riverwalk. Been there many, many times. It was created for what it is. I mean, for the restaurants, for all of the buildings that align the river, exit out onto the river, and so it was well planned, and they've, you know, developed an extension, and so, you know, if you get an opportunity, take one of those little boat rides and go through it. Anyway, our canal, sadly, wasn't, I actually worked, we were talking about what we used to do. I worked for Goldsmith, our former mayor, for a number of years, and he was, one of his successes was to extend the canal. And so the acquisition that occurred of all the properties and, you know, all the development that went on, there wasn't a full thought out plan on what ought to go there. And as a result, we wound up with a lot more residential, right, not much retail. And so, unfortunately, I think we could have had a better plan in place. It's beautiful.
It's popular.
If you go and run, right. If you want to take a walk, run. But when you think about the San Antonio Riverwalk, it wasn't created for that, unfortunately.
When Mayor Ballard was on and we were talking about, it might have been one of your, what's your legacy, which is a word he doesn't like, but accomplishment or something you're most proud of or whatever. I believe his answer is, because I think it's consistent, is connectivity.
Yes.
And I believe one of the reasons he emphasized that, A, was because of his time overseas in the military, where everything is so easy to get to. Like in Europe, we take a train and you're, sure, going from one country to the other and so on and so forth. And the fact that his kids really influenced his way of thinking. He would tell you that he wanted to create, and I think he did, create a city where young people wanted to come here.
Yes.
Live, work, raise a family, get an education. But connectivity is something that he's gone back to many times. I bring that up because, do you think it's feasible that the kind of embryonic White River projects and ideas that have been floated in the last year or so, is that the next natural extension of what Indianapolis has done downtown?
So I think in the next decade, we will see, you know, when I think about downtown proper, we often talk about the Mile Square, which is north, south, west, and east streets. But as we watch development push out, we have, you know, Bottle Works, which is the eastern portion of Mass Avenue. You have 16 Tech, which is a northwest, you know, up around 16th Street. We certainly have the GM stamping plant and the redevelopment to come there, and Criminal Justice Center, exactly, if you want to call it. But so you start to see the development push out in all four directions of downtown. The river, you know, we've always turned our backs on the river. So if you look at IEPY, you know, nothing faces the river. None of their buildings face the river. So we really haven't developed around the river, and we've always kind of, you know, turned our backs on it. So it's about time that we engage the river. Most cities do. And so, yes, I think that will be from as a destination point for downtown. I think that is logical.
And that's one of the things that I've read, is that the Deep Rock Tunnel, all the stuff that's happening through Citizens Energy, is, mm-hmm, one of the things that's making this possible. Right. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, nobody wants to get in that water right now.
That's what I was always told. Yeah, it's like, right, you do when you're a kid, don't get in that water.
Right.
You went to Broad Ripple, grew up here, as you stated earlier. How do you feel when you look at your city and think about this? And this is a question I've asked other people, so I'll just ask it this way. If I told you in 1979 or 1975, Indianapolis in 2019 is going to look like this, have hosted this, is home to this, which one of these things would have made you the most surprised?
You know, I remember, I was always fascinated by downtown, so I would get on the bus and take it downtown. I may get off, I may not, just a route around downtown, and I can clearly remember what downtown was then, and that was 78, 79, and so much, you know, there was a lot of vacancy, it was dirty, it was dark. And everyone says it rolled up at 5 o'clock, and it was true. I later worked a couple of jobs, and one of them was hostessing at a restaurant that's no longer there. But the only time people came in was when there was a Pacers game, at Market Square Arena. So, and that was it. I mean, it was just so rare for people to even come out at night for dinner downtown. So now, fast forward, you know, it's still hard to get into most of the restaurants in downtown, certainly on the weekends. You would never have thought about residential living in downtown. So those are the things that I think about when I think about the change in downtown and the transformation that we've seen.
And when you're walking around, like at night, like say a Saturday night or a Thursday night or whenever, as you just said, is there a certain, you just kind of shake your head?
You do, and you go, what? A lot of people say, look at all the people on the sidewalks and it's nighttime.
That's exactly right.
It is. It's true. And I do, some of the other cities that I go to, there still aren't, there isn't a lot of pedestrian traffic. So we're very fortunate that people feel comfortable walking around downtown at night. And downtown is our safest neighborhood in Indianapolis. I mean, when you look at the data. So it makes me feel good that we can maintain a safe downtown and that, you know, there are so many folks that want to live downtown.
You're listening to Leaders and Legends. Today we have on Downtown Indy. Let me get this right.
Yes.
Downtown Indy, Inc.
Yes.
President Sherry Seiwert.
Nice.
We're sponsored by Girl Scouts of Central Indiana, our new sponsor, our new title sponsor. Mass Ave. Has any part of Indianapolis changed as much in the last 5 to 10 years? As Mass Ave?
You know, I would say that Fountain Square is certainly
pretty close.
Pretty close. And I come from a community development background. So I've had a lot of jobs. I've worked for a group called LISC.
Starting local, as a hostess.
Yes, right. Local Initiative Support Corporation. And we're a financial intermediary where we invested. We were the first money in to try and create that spark to bring the market into a certain area. And so Mass Ave was one of those. And so it generally takes about 20 years to really see that sort of transformation. By the time you start investing in a community, and then there are local folks that want to participate, and then, you know, the lenders come in shortly, and then capital. So it usually takes about a 20 years to see that full transformation. And so, Mass Ave's changed significantly, almost to the point, though, where it's lost its art, the feeling that people loved having the the local artists and that kind of infusion of local restaurants. And now we're starting to see the national brands come in. And a lot of folks would love to be able to get ahead of that. To really maintain that genuine feeling that we had 5 years ago.
And once Bottleworks gets up and running, then is it your sense that once that happens, then Mass Ave is not done? That's not the right way to say it, but it's...
It will be fully developed. Yeah. I mean, there will be very few spaces that I can think of that are still remaining that you wouldn't develop.
Do you get the sense that downtown transcends politics? I used to work in the mayor's office, and people who lived in Marion County would say downtown gets everything, which is only ironic because everybody who doesn't live in Marion County says Marion County gets everything. So the all politics is local axiom seems right to rule. But how do you defend downtown when people say, downtown gets it all? Why aren't we getting X, Y, and Z in Pike or Franklin?
Sure. So when I defend downtown, the way I think about it is when you think about the city's budget, it's made up largely by two components, from a real estate tax and from a income tax. And so for downtown, it is 1/100th of a percentage of the rest of the city. But we generate more revenue, meaning we have a number of affluent people moving downtown, which, again, we can talk about that. But the affluence of downtown and that income tax that gets generated, along with the rise in property values, that money then gets dispersed throughout the city. So we're a generator of revenue that the remainder of the city can utilize.
Downtown is a donor. And not only is it a donor, it's unfathomable to think that some of the, if not all of the things that we've hosted and been home to for the past, let's say, 12 years, mm-hmm. without a vibrant downtown, I mean, these things aren't even possible. We don't have a lot of the attractions or natural, whether it's mountains, beaches, right. It's been made several times. So just I'm going to ask you this just honestly, because I'm going to show my bias. Does your head just explode? You just were like, like you're kidding me, right? You're going to rail against downtown. You think downtown is the problem with this city?
Well, right. Yes, my head does want to explode. But again, I come at it from a revenue perspective. And the healthier our downtown is, the city is going to benefit from that overall. So not only that, you want to be proud. You want to be proud of the city that you're a part of. And so when there are big events that are going on downtown, you know, people do. They gravitate downtown. They want a piece of it. They want to, you know, be a part of it. So, yeah, it's not just about the revenue. I think it's also about pride.
You came on as a president right after the Super Bowl was hosted in February of 12. Was there a lot of residual benefit? I mean, did that goodwill help you last a long time? Because clearly Indianapolis took the Super Bowl. This is incredible to say. Took the Super Bowl and remade the event.
I agree. Yeah, it was such a great event. And people still talk about it. I mean, we're still compared to other cities as the best Super Bowl city as a host, and for a variety of reasons. And, downtown certainly benefited as a result. Everything was clean and polished and ready to go. Certainly Georgia Street was recreated as the Super Bowl Village. We now manage that space and have since the end of the Super Bowl. And it's certainly been great for downtown. It's been great for our organization, and we've learned a lot. So, yeah.
But do you think that it made people look at Indianapolis, not just downtown, but look at Indianapolis different? Like, you got called up to the big leagues, you hit it out of the park. We didn't expect this. Now the weather helped, but didn't expect this. So now we're going to look at you differently.
When you think about doing events, I mean, they're difficult to manage. And it is as if the stars aligned, thank you, Allison Millington, that everything went off without a hitch. And so, yes, I mean, we succeeded as a city, and all eyes were on us. And so people saw us. And I often hear this, that once people come to Indianapolis, they go, wow, I didn't realize what a great city this was. So getting folks here to actually look around was a big advantage for us, because so many people saw us in such a great light.
We had Bill Benner on the podcast, and I was a part of it for a little bit, and then I wasn't able to do it. But he was very eloquent in talking about how the volunteer community came together for the Super Bowl, and not just the Super Bowl, it does for other events. How important is that to downtown, to keep downtown vibrant and going and welcoming and friendly?
You know, it is very, very important. I just wish that we utilized volunteers more effectively, because I think that they are there, and there are a lot of folks that want to get engaged in a variety of different things. But it's we need, as the civic organizations between Sports Corp and visiting ourselves and the chamber, need to figure out how we better utilize our volunteer base more often.
Is it something where is it just an organization perspective, like you have to be better organized or find more things for them to do? Maybe quantify that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I think that there is plenty to do. What would be great is if all of the organizations came together with some commonalities of, you know, keeping volunteers busy, because if it's episodic, it's hard to continually engage them. So if we're asking them to come and plant flowers, you know, three times a year, and, you know, help us, you know, with some cleanups and that kind of thing, that's not exciting. They don't want to do that. They really want to be a part of events. And so how can we better manage utilizing volunteers for all of the events that occur?
Challenges I mean, Indianapolis is,
sure,
has certainly, and we're speaking specifically about downtown, but Indianapolis has challenges. One of them is certainly maintenance, ongoing and strategic maintenance. There's been a discussion of a commuter tax, and I hate to say this, I guess, hell, I just ran the IPS referenda that raised taxes, so let's just raise them all.
Right.
I'm a huge proponent of the commuter tax, and I don't want to telegraph your punch, but talk a little bit about that, because that can get really kind of snotty. The discussion can get kind of snotty.
Yeah, you know, I've always liked the idea of a user fee. So if you're going to, you know, utilize a public service, you ought to pay for it. And so we do have a significant number of folks that come into Marion County that don't live here, so they're not paying taxes in our county, but they're utilizing our roads, they're utilizing our fire, certainly our emergency services. And yes, so I do believe that our city would benefit greatly if we had that commuter tax.
And what's the argument against it? I mean, so
I'm already paying taxes at home, so why should I pay them again? I think is probably what people would likely say. Although I've had a lot of folks say, sure, put one in place. I drive, you know, through Marion County every day. I should pay.
Is it reasonable? Do you find the opposite side to what you believe reasonable, or is it just a matter of it's a cop out?
I think what is probably keeping us from actually putting one in place is the system. So how do you create a system to collect those types of taxes? And I think if that were well thought out and people understood a little bit more about how much they would pay for use of what services, we'd probably get a little bit more rhythm on it.
Is it another example of downtown gets everything, meaning Indianapolis gets everything, so that the donut counties, the people who come in, say, well, Indianapolis already gets this and downtown already gets that? I mean, that mentality, I think, is myopic, to say the least.
But
is that what you run up against?
No, I think the question is, what is it going to be used for? Is it going to be used for infrastructure, for better roads? If you're driving into downtown and you're leaving Hamilton County, and there's a significant difference, and I don't know how often you get there, but every once in a while.
I'm not allowed in Hamilton County. I'm an East Sider.
We're not
allowed up there.
So, you know, you'll see that difference in the road quality. I think people would be willing to pay, if for no other reason, for damage to their vehicles.
Optimistic that it can happen over time?
I have seen that it generally takes something to get so bad before you'll see change. For instance, we're on the taxes. Last year, we undertook something called an economic improvement district, and it is where property owners tax themselves, and the resources go for really whatever they determine, but it was going to be for more cleanliness, maintenance of downtown, homeless services, some more aspirational aspects for downtown. Property owners ended up signing on to that because the larger percentage signed on to it, and unfortunately didn't pass the city council. But people understood what they were, if they're going to pay a certain amount of money, this is what they were going to get. But the other portion that didn't sign it said, well, we're clean enough, which is probably true, and we're safe enough, which is probably true. So we really don't need it. Most other cities that have put these in place, everything had deteriorated so badly that they went ahead and put an economic improvement district in place to climb back out of
that. So other cities have. So you were following the model of.
We're the only city of size in the country that doesn't have one.
And it's an interesting mentality, because good enough, if that mentality had prevailed in the last 50 years, then we would be nothing. We would be what P.E. McAllister, who came here in the 40s, was from Madison, is truly one of the founding fathers of modern Indianapolis. He said, we were just an oval in a cornfield. That's all we were for decades. And so this non-aspirational, non-willing to take the bit in their mouth and do what it takes to continue to punch right. above our weight. Okay, so does that make your head explode? Does that just make you go, do you understand how we came from just Indianapolis to a destination city for the world?
Right. And again, it's everybody is continually competing. Every city is competing against each other for the events, for the talent, for, you know, the
companies,
what's
jobs.
Right. And if we don't continually up our game, we're going to start to fall behind.
Is there a particular, and I'm going to ask you about another challenge, but is there a particular city that you're like squinting at, keeping your eye on? Hear a lot of Nashville buzz.
A lot of Nashville buzz. Yes. I was just going to say, I've been there, a lot of fun. But, you know, I will say every time I come back to Indianapolis, I think they don't have anything on us. So I'm still proud of where we are. And I don't think that there is necessarily, and maybe I haven't been there yet, but any cities that I have visited, and I've gone to a lot, that I've said they far exceed, you know, Indianapolis and what we have to offer.
Where should Indianapolis, when Stevie stays, the remarkable Stevie who runs the city market, and Amanda, beautiful Amanda Kingsbury, were on, and we were talking about Indianapolis, and they had a great perspective, especially Amanda, Stevie being in the trenches every day, basically,
right.
and Amanda being at the Star and commenting all this thing. What does Indianapolis need to do better?
Well, I mean, it's easy to always think about the underbelly of what we can do better. And you know, we need to invest more in our infrastructure. It is aging, and so we definitely need to pay attention to that. For us, and again, by comparison to other cities, we don't have a problem, but I spend a significant amount of my time with the homeless population in downtown, and we're working on it, but we don't have a very good system in place for permanently housing homeless that have chronic addiction and mental illness.
And how much of that, and we're talking about challenges, how much of that falls on you? Or you feel like it falls on you because of the concentration in the very areas downtown that you're marketing to companies and organizations and events to come
sure.
here. And I mean, nobody wants to be, I mean, I don't want to say uncomfortable, but it can get uncomfortable.
It can get very uncomfortable. And, you know, when you, apologies, but, you know, when you have folks that are defecating, you know, out in front of buildings and laying in the door wells and, you know, they don't smell very good, and or they're strung out on spice, and it doesn't. It's not a good combination when you have folks that are visiting downtown or coming here from for a convention. So, you know, when you think about the homeless population, we have wonderful missions for folks to go to on a temporary basis, but we don't have a permanent housing solution in place for them. And so we as a city, we're working on one, but it should have happened years ago.
And is it fair or unfair that you've played, your organization plays a disproportionate role? It seems like, or is it fair for people to look to you to be either the solution or a huge part of the solution? Or you're like, guys, we have different priorities. This is just one of them.
We're a good connector. So, we hear a lot from our business owners, and we work very closely with IMPD. So we understand the issues related to the property owner side. You know, they've got folks that are sleeping in their parking lots or, you know, in their door wells, and there's just constant shenanigans going on. But I also know a lot of folks on the social service side. So it's great that I can connect the two and help to mitigate some of the issues with street outreach and the services that are existing, and, you know, just help combine that company or that conversation.
You're listening to the Leaders and Legends podcast presented by Veteran Strategies. We're here with Downtown Indy Inc. President Sherry Seiwert. We're also sponsored by Girl Scouts of Central Indiana. The weather's changing. Circle's going to get only more busy. The areas around the circle are going to get only more busy. Is this when you really start to feel it? When you start to look at your calendar and like, wait, we got this.
We do.
You get your vacation in early?
I actually have one planned for May, so it's not good timing, but it is what it is. So it really, things do tick up in the summer months, and everybody wants to be outside. You know, it's you know, after a long winter, it's sort of that reward to be able to get outside and just enjoy sitting around the circle and watching. But so many events. I looked at the event numbers, and we've seen a significant increase in the number of events that are happening in downtown by comparison to the rest of the city, which we love. But yes, we have to be ready for it. And it's the good with the bad. It's the fun. It's the people that want to come out and participate in the events. And again, it's the, we see an uptick in the homeless numbers and what I call the travelers. Those are the folks that really don't stay here, but they come through and hang out on the streets in the summer. So it's a lively downtown.
Sherry, pro scooter or anti scooter?
So I have a Harley. I'm happy about that. I've never been on a scooter. How do you like that?
I guess you could paint a scooter name on the side of your Harley and just tool around the cultural trail.
I think that they were dropped in many cities, and none of us were prepared. We don't have safe places for them to ride. And if we did, I would feel a lot different about them. I will say, I never see anyone on one that isn't happy. Everybody always has a big smile on their face.
You know, that's a great point. Now, those of us who ride our bicycles, I'm not a Harley person. Actually never even been on a motorcycle, so.
I could fix that.
You might be the only one who could. Maybe Dave Taylor or someone from IMPD. As someone who rides his bike downtown all the time, the riders tend to be in their own world, and that makes me a little nervous. It seems that they can't be on the cultural trail. They're not allowed to be on the cultural trail.
Right.
So then that pushes them out into the road, which as someone in a car, you're like, if I was going to get hit by something on a scooter, I'd rather get hit by a bicycle than, you know, some sort of delivery truck. How do you figure that out? Do you think it's still being figured out? Because you did. You're right. They dropped them in here. The council kind of then weighed in. And then there was a little bit of a populist kind of pushback, like, let these people do this sort of thing. And then you come downtown and it's a lot different than the Pacers bike share because we're all going the same speed.
Right.
It seems to me to be a natural addition to the city landscape, to the urban core, but it's not without danger. Is there a solution you think that's waiting in the wings?
Right. So we tell scooter riders don't, ride on the sidewalks, and you're supposed to wear a helmet. How many of us carry around a helmet
when we're... I've never seen anyone.
Never. So that pushes them onto the street, which unless we have dedicated bike pass and or scooter pass, it really just isn't a good... It's a recipe for disaster. We've seen so many people get knocked off their scooters, unfortunately.
And so it's happening in other cities too. Sure. So have you reached out to city X, Y, or Z? And
we have.
Have you guys figured this out?
We have. We have. And so, we continually try and put, you don't want to put too many rules on there because then again, they're not going to abide by them. And then it becomes a lot more work for IMPD to try and chase after folks and ticket them. So I think if we can, just think logically about not only what we have with scooters, we will likely have dockless bikes. Other cities are talking about those as the next.
They get picked up as well, like the scooters do, and then pushed back into.
Right.
Because the bike share program has been pretty, it's been very popular and very successful.
And it's wonderful because you know where the bike is and you know where you're going to drop it off and it's not laying on the sidewalk. But if we get dockless bikes, then think about that coupled with scooters and the sidewalk, people don't think about it, but it really has become an expensive piece of real estate. And so with everything that, including, outdoor cafes and, the utilization of our sidewalks, we need to be very thoughtful about what can be out on the sidewalks and what shouldn't be.
Because it's really, and you push back on this, it's really two separate sets of activation working against each other.
Correct.
Going back to Stevie at the market and the plaza, and now there's the games and there's places to eat out there, and things that have really changed over the last 10 to 12 years at the market. So if people are going to be milling about, which is what you want, hopefully spending money, then that seems to not necessarily mesh well with somebody who doesn't have a helmet on, who's going 15 miles an hour on a scooter. Is that something you've, that's one example perhaps. Are there other examples that you have encountered? You're like, we've got the irresistible object and the resistible, whatever the hell it is. What's it called? Immovable object and irresistible force in multiple cases downtown. Speaking of my IPS education. Are there other examples where you've got competing interests? They're both good, perhaps, but they're in conflict.
Well, let me turn that around and think about, you know, why the scooters do benefit us. Think about the folks that are living downtown, but they may not be able to afford the immediate, you know, when I think of the core of downtown, the rents, you know, the average rents, $1,200 to $1,400 a month. So, you know, push out a concentric circle, and the scooter then becomes a means of transportation, right? So it's inexpensive. You don't have to own a car, and if you don't have a bike, or don't want to lug it around, boy, it's great. Why not just hop on a scooter? Or if you're taking the red line in, but it drops you off, you know, at five blocks from your office, why not hop on a scooter and be able to take that right to your front door? So, you know, it really does benefit folks beyond just, you know, somebody that wants to have a little bit of fun. It can become that next leg of a multimodal transit plan,
especially as there's more shops downtown where you don't have to go to the Kroger and Nora and once a week and load up a bunch of grocery. You can go just say, I'm going to go to Whole Foods, or I'm going to go to Needler's for just every 2 days and have a couple of bags, and that's it.
Yeah.
You mentioned something there kind of in passing which prevented me from making a grievous error, and that would be the omission of mentioning the red line. Is that a downtown issue for you, or is that bigger? It's obviously a bigger downtown development, but how critical is the red line to you, to downtown Indy Inc.
Right.
and getting people in and out and to and from work? And it's the to and from work part that I think people don't pay enough attention to.
Agreed. So, you know, emissions has always been an issue for the city. Our air quality is not great. But when you think about leasing more space in downtown, most office brokers will tell you that parking is a big issue.
Denison was one of my clients, and that's constant, agreed.
Right. And so employers feel this obligation to pay for their employees' parking, yet we're not running out of parking spaces. We have plenty of parking spaces in downtown. They're just not in the right places. So if we can figure out a better share of folks riding the BRT beyond, you know, the red line, we'll have the blue line and purple. And I think that will still allow us to not be so concerned about parking and, you know, having our car right underneath our office. And you know, if we can start to say to our employers, why not just give your employee $100 and let them decide? That way, you know, they can figure out if they want to take the red line and, you know, the bike share and instead of paying for parking. But, you know, I've seen in other cities that lessens the burden by about 20%.
You get the sense that transportation for Indianapolis is the preferred method of transportation for Indianapolis. It's not, and correct me, say I'm wrong, it's cultural. We got the interstates. We've got the roads. We just expect our cars. It's almost like Pavlov. We just expect to just walk in and get our cars. And when I was working for Mayor Ballard, and this discussion was really starting to take off, not that other administrations hadn't tried to tackle it, but my thought is that Hoosiers are addicted to the convenience of getting in their car and being able to go wherever they want, whenever they want. And until you change the culture or the mindset, then all of this spending and investment, while it's not necessarily a bad idea, that's as big a hurdle as anything else. Is that a fair statement?
It is a fair
Hoosiers
statement.
Culture?
Yes. Yes. I've heard many people say, but we love our cars. And it's true. We do. And, I, it, you know, it could be a partly the weather. It, you know, you just don't want to schlep to the, we don't have a good park and ride system. You know, you want to be able to hop in your car whenever you need to and not wait on a scheduled bus to, you know, five blocks away. So yeah, it'd be, I think again, until parking prices get so ridiculous and people start to look at, for alternatives, we'll continue to.
I just joined the downtown Y, the city Y. I mean, you can go to any Y, but
sure.
100% the reason was parking. I used to work out at the Columbia Club, and I would spend 15, no offense to the Columbia Club, terrific place, but you'd spend 15 minutes driving around downtown to find a parking space. And on a 4-degree day, if you were lucky enough to find one two blocks away, well then, kind of is no incentive. Whereas I thought the City Way YMCA with its parking program, I mean, it had me, I'm looking to move into a condo or an apartment, and everyone I talk to, first question is, okay, tell me about parking, tell me about that. And they go, that's everybody's first question, and mm-hmm. I think it's cultural, and we're used to that convenience.
When you look at the analytics of our website, it is the number one reason people go to our website is for parking.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, that they would assume you would be the experts, right? So that makes sense.
True.
Last question before we go to the five questions is, Downtown Indy Inc. is obviously a nonpartisan. It's not, doesn't get involved in particular fights, but you've had to work with different mayors and different leaders.
Yes.
You worked for Mayor Goldsmith. Mm-hmm. What was that like, and how does working for a mayoral administration help you understand what other mayors need and emphasize?
So you understand that working for a local government is not easy, and that you are on all the time. I mean, you don't put, you know, at the time, you just don't put your phone down. You don't put your, you have to be able to respond all the time. And it is, I'll tell you, it's between city and state government, it's even more interesting, because in state government, you're not in somebody's backyard. I mean, you don't get the constant barking dog, you know, questions and want solutions as you do at the city level. So because of the state level, you know, they have their own local jurisdiction, so they're going to bother their own city council or mayor. So there's a vast difference between state and local government. But working for a city, you do understand that you have to be responsive to the general public. Then you have the city county council, and then you certainly have the mayor. And so trying to, you learn politics, even if you're apolitical, you learn that system pretty quickly. And you also understand, again, how the city's budget works and how difficult it is to be all things to all people with a small budget.
It's coming up. It's coming up on a series of amazing events. Ryan Vaughn talked about it in the podcast we did with him. The next 3 or 4 years for Indianapolis are going to be, maybe 5 years, are going to be off the charts in terms of sporting, big sporting events, national championship games,
yes,
all-star games, that sort of thing. Are you planning now? Like, you understand what's coming?
Well, we do understand what's coming, and it is, you know, one great thing about Indianapolis, among many, but we often talk about the partnerships that we have, and so it is great that when we do have big events coming, that the Sports Corp can reach out to us or Visit Indy, you know, that we will all work together.
Everybody gets along.
Absolutely. And so that is a huge benefit in working in this field. And because we know that at the end of the day, we, you know, to make the city look good, to make the event run well, we all have to work together. So that's wonderful. We as an organization have recently been awarded a grant from Lilly Endowment to create a an activation on Monument Circle. And so we're working on that now so that it can certainly be in place by the time these large events come to Indianapolis. And that will be, there's a whole lighting component to it, as well as a video mapping on the exterior of some of the buildings on the circle, if you think about that, the facades of the building. So
Right. It'll
be fun. It'll just be a fun activation for large events.
Before we get to the five questions, let me give you an opportunity. Tell folks why they should support Downtown Indy Inc. What comes with being involved, with being a member or a sponsor? Make a plug for people to contribute and join and be members.
How nice of you. Thank you for saying that. You know, if you care about downtown from a personal perspective or from an economic perspective, Downtown Indy Inc. is the, we often call ourselves the people behind the place. We're the ones that help to make sure that downtown continues to be vibrant. We help to manage that chaos that occurs in downtown. And, you know, we're kind of the oil that makes the engine run. So, you know, again, I go back to this personal level. You know, you may think about Circle of Lights. That's one of the events that we do. And so
the tree lighting for Monument Circle.
It's a traditional event that some people feel very strongly about. That too, you know, if you want to continue to have a safe downtown, you know, we try to make a significant impact in all of those areas.
In the IMPD downtown, especially Phil Burton, who's a friend of mine,
yes.
They're a terrific, terrific group of people.
They are. We work very closely with them. And Captain Mann, who by virtue of his position with IMPD, works part-time on our staff and then part-time with Downtown District. And so it's a huge benefit for us. We know exactly what's going on any minute of the day as it relates to the crime element. And then, of course, you know, we have great relationships with the property owners. So the combination of having the partnership between IMPD and the building owners is great.
Truth serum time. Do you have a particularly favorite convention when you see people coming in and walking around?
Well, FDIC, the firefighters coming in.
You just park your Harley there on Georgia Street.
You know, I will say,
Andy, are you listening?
I do love motorcycles on Meridian. It is, if you've never been to it, to see thousands of motorcycles parked all from Monument Circle, and there's your stacked up next to each other, just thousands of them around Monument Circle, all the way down to Georgia Street, all the way down South Meridian. It's a lot of fun.
Isn't it? One year was the Motor GP the same weekend as Gen Con.
It was.
And I took my kids downtown. Speaking of things you never did when you were younger,
yes,
you can attest, is to go downtown with your kid, with your parents, and just walk around. And it was like to see all these motorcyclists, and to your point, and then, you know, there's Obi-Wan Kenobi right. 3 feet away.
It was great. You know, I think we try to make sure that we can put as many conventions, you know, going on at once, and it's hard for the convention center to accommodate all of them. And so we've either had drum corps and, you know, motorcycles and Meridian, or, you know, just it's fun to see the pairings.
And there's never an issue.
Nope.
We're very, very, very
that you know
rare.
Of.
Yeah, exactly. You're listening to the Leaders and Legends podcast presented by Veteran Strategies and sponsored by the Girl Scouts of Central Indiana. We're here with Sherry Seiwert, who is president. Are you CEO too?
President.
Ooh, president of Downtown Indy Inc. We've come to the five questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What was the first job you had?
The very first job or the first job out of college?
Very first job.
I worked at the original Capri restaurant, which was on 54th Street, and I was the salad girl. And I was so badly wanted a job, and so I told them I was 15. I was really only 14. Mm. But they hired me. Yeah. So that was my first taste of the restaurant business. I waited tables, many, many tables.
So there's the tool girl, tool time girl. Now we have the salad girl. What was your first concert? Not with your parents. The first concert that you went to.
Oh, come on. With my parents. You're going to like David Cassidy. That was not my choosing.
And that was with your parents, or you actually bought the ticket?
No, I did not. I went along. My sister had this huge crush on him.
David Cassidy from the Partridge Family, in case you all aren't old enough to know.
Yep, and she needed someone to go with her. So the unfortunate little sister went with her to the state fairgrounds to hear David Cassidy. Ugh.
Remember any of the songs?
Awful. No, fortunately I don't. Do you?
No, I was listening to Houses of the Holy by Led Zeppelin on 8-track, thank God. The benefit of having older brothers and sisters.
Was that your first 8-track? Mine was the Beach Boys.
The first 8-track I can remember seeing was... I think it's Deep Purple, Machine Head, whatever had Smoke on the Water on it. I think that may be Machine Head.
Is that right?
And my sister's 10 years older than me. So when I was 4, 5, 6, 7,
that's what you're listening to.
I mean, it's Beatles, sure. The White Album. It's, you know, right. Led Zeppelin 2. It's that sort of stuff. So I really got really the Who, Pink Floyd. I got really lucky.
Wow.
As opposed to what passes for
Alice
music
Cooper
these days.
And, right. So I understand the older sibling.
Mm-hmm. You might. I'll have to show you the picture I posted of my son at the Alice Cooper concert.
Oh, you should.
Oh, he loved it. Loved it. I told him, I said, you've taken the average age of this concert goers and lowered it by about 80%. Sorry to digress. If you could recommend any book to someone, which book would you recommend?
Oh, my gosh. Is that what everybody says? Oh my gosh. Let me think about this.
Well, they say, oh my God. And then they say the Bible.
well, that's not what's going to come out of my mouth. But, you know, I read a book, going back to homelessness, read a book that a friend of mine wrote called Crazy. And Pete Early used to write for The Post. And he has a son that is schizophrenic. And so he writes about just the institutionalization of those that are homeless with a mental illness and kind of takes it through his personal journey. So, yeah, that was good. It's a good one.
And it's been helpful?
Yes.
If you could witness any event in history, be there when it happened, which event? This is why you don't get these questions ahead of time, Madam President.
So you can read our faces and go, are you kidding me?
Witness any event in history, be there when it happened, as it happened.
You know, I was just a kid, maybe not even, when the civil rights movement was in full swing. But, you know, I would like to go just be a witness or be able to see that firsthand. Some of, you know, Rosa Parks, you know, I would love to be able to just...
To be on the bus when she said, no, I'm not getting up.
Right, right. And just every, you know, the real stories that occurred when that, again, when the civil rights movement was in full swing.
You ever been to the Henry Ford Museum?
I've not.
Just go to the Henry Ford Museum. That's up by Detroit. The museum has the bus.
Oh, that's right.
There's a famous picture of President Obama on it, but they have the actual bus.
I read that.
Last question is, if you could have dinner with anyone in the world, a couple hours, off the record, talk about anything, who would you choose? Whom would you choose? No family members.
No Greg family
Ballard.
Members?
No Greg Ballard. No family members.
No, you know what? I would, you know, if you've lost a parent, you would normally say, you know,
he said
dad.
Winnie. He said Winnie.
Did he?
He him and hawed, and oh, then he goes, gosh. Of course, Winnie. I was...
can't say Andy. So a historic figure of...
anyone in the world right now. Sit down for a couple hours.
You know... Oh, that's so hard. Anyone in the world, is it like can I say Einstein? I mean, somebody that would just
someone
be so
nope, someone
fascinating.
Living.
That,
someone living right now. Have to be alive. No favorite rock star, no favorite celebrity, no favorite author. You can say Abdul.
I can find him anytime at the Columbia Club or smoking a cigar. Okay. Sorry, Andy. Harrison Ford. So I've never been starstruck, but you know, I find that man fascinating. So there you go.
He's the premier popular actor of the generation for sure, and he certainly seems very down to earth and
exactly
and a fun companion.
I know that's just not what probably your listeners want to hear.
You know, I should have been a better host and said, if you could take anyone on a ride on your Harley, who would
you
choose?
Well, there you go. See, yeah, sir.
All right, you get a mulligan.
These up
so
again.
That's the.
I do get a mulligan. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, well it'll still be the same answer.
Thank you very much, Sherry, for coming on today. You were terrific.
My pleasure. Thank
not
you so much for
person.
Asking me.
Well, you're very welcome, and there's not a single person I know who works as hard to make Indianapolis look great and to make people feel at home in maybe sometimes a city that's not theirs. And so we all owe you a debt of gratitude.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Leaders and Legends podcast. My name is Robert Vane. We are sponsored by Veteran Strategies, and we also have a new and wonderful relationship with the Girl Scouts of Central Indiana. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for listening to Leaders and Legends, brought to you by Veteran Strategies Incorporated. If you want to contact us about this program or our menu of public relations services, please send us an email at robert@veteranstrategies.com. That's Robert@veteranstrategies.com.